This is another exclusive podcast from Pituitary World News. Today, Dr. Blevins discusses ACTH producing adenomas. Here's Dr. Blevins.
Good morning, everyone. This is Dr. Louis Blevins of Pituitary World News, podcasting today from Sausalito, California. I'm speaking with you today about ACTH producing pituitary adenomas. These tumors are derived from the corticotroph cells located in the anterior pituitary gland. These cells produce POMC, or pro-opio-melanocortin, which is carved into several different hormone peptides, including ACTH, or adrenocorticotrophic hormone, which, as you know, stimulates cortisol production by the adrenal glands. Corticotropin-releasing hormone and vasopressin from the anterior hypothalamus and medial hypothalamus stimulate ACTH release by these corticotroph cells, and then cortisol levels, in turn, feed back at the level of the hypothalamus and the pituitary to restrain ACTH production by these cells in normal individuals. We are not clear on the genetic or other tumorigenesis factors that lead to the development of an ACTH-producing pituitary adenoma. Several theories do abound, including the fact that these tumors are thought to be more common in persons with a family history of depression or a self-reported history of depression. In my opinion, most of that research is speculative at best. As is the case with all pituitary tumors, these tumors are classified according to size. Microadenomas are less than 1 centimeter in diameter, and macroadenomas are greater than 1 centimeter in diameter and often invasive. About 80% of these tumors are microadenomas and 20% are macroadenomas. Interestingly, if you take a look at all tumors that go to the pathology laboratory that immunostain for the presence of ACTH in tumor cells, you find that about 40% of these tumors are actually not functional, in that the tumor produced ACTH but did not secrete ACTH. And those patients typically present looking like they have a non-functioning pituitary adenoma. Curiously, in some of these patients, the tumors can, oftentimes years later, revert to producing ACTH and secreting it, leading to the clinical syndrome of Cushing's and marked hypercortisolism detected by laboratory testing. It's almost as if some of these tumors, which were silent before, had a switch turn on so that they can then release hormone and cause the hypercortisolism and the syndrome of Cushing's. Lastly, a very small number of persons who look like they have pituitary Cushing's actually have corticotroph hyperplasia, which is simply an increase in the number of normal ACTH-producing cells, not derived from one single parent cell like a tumor would be. But all the cells are increased in number. And this can be due to corticotropin-releasing hormone-secreting tumors, either of the hypothalamus or of the lung. Briefly, in passing, I'll say that neuroendocrine tumors anywhere in the body and almost in every organ of the body have been documented to produce ACTH, leading to the syndrome of Cushing's. The most common locations being in the lung, the thymus gland, the pancreas, the adrenal glands, but essentially every tissue with neuroendocrine cells has been implicated. Many of these patients actually mimic pituitary Cushing's. For example, bronchial carcinoid tumors even behave very similarly to pituitary Cushing's in regards to the responses to different dynamic endocrine tests to evaluate the source of ACTH. Most of the time, and especially in regards to the ACTH-producing pituitary microadenomas and some of the ectopic tumors, but not all, these tumors are very efficient producers and secretors of ACTH. As a result, the tumors are often very small when they are diagnosed. Sometimes they're not even found for years. in some cases of pituitary Cushing's and ectopic ACTH secretion. And that is part of the challenge in diagnosis and treatment. If you look at data from the 1990s, about one-third of ACTH-producing pituitary tumors were not even seen on MRI, though there was historical, clinical, and biochemical evidence for the presence of the tumor, and these tumors were located at the time of exploratory surgery. However, with current MRI technologies and the use of dynamic contrast enhancement, we can identify nearly all, but certainly not all, pituitary adenomas that secrete ACTH located within the pituitary gland. And certainly when the MRI is equivocal or shows a tumor that's not clear it's really an ACTH-producing tumor, in that it might look like a cystic tumor or a Rathke's cleft cyst, inferior petrosal sinus sampling can be performed to evaluate for a central to peripheral gradient. And if that's abnormal, it would confirm the presence of a pituitary source of ACTH secretion. With that said, however, some patients, even who have had petrosal sinus sampling, have negative pathology at the time of surgery. Many of them are cured because the surgical specimen was lost in the suction machine that the surgeon was using to remove blood and tissue fluid at the time of the operation. But still, there are a number of patients who had syndrome of ectopic ACTH hypersecretion, even though they were thought to have pituitary disease. And some of these patients actually had ectopic CRH production. Others still didn't have Cushing's to begin with. And unfortunately, I've seen that far too many times in my practice. One of the things we like to ask the pathologist to do in those equivocal cases or where the pathology was negative would be to look at the normal pituitary cells in the normal pituitary gland that might have been resected at the time of surgery. There's a feature called Crookes-Hyland change, which is seen in normal pituitary cells in response to chronic high-dose glucocorticoids or cortisol levels. And that sort of is one of the cardinal features indicating the presence of definite hypercortisolism. I'm not talking here about Crookes cell pituitary adenomas, which is another variety of Cushing's, but I'm talking about Crookes hyalinization in normal ACTH-producing pituitary cells. My observations over about 28 years now of being involved in the evaluation and management of patients with pituitary disorders are that microadenoma patients have similar risks of recurrent disease, as do most patients with pituitary adenomas. Those with macroadenomas, the recurrence rates are much higher. And this is largely because of the invasive nature of many of these tumors. I have seen a couple of patients who had ACTH-producing carcinomas of the pituitary gland, and these patients, when you look back at their initial presentation, had even more aggressive tumors than those that were simply invasive. And they were uncontrollable with repeated attempts at surgery, radiotherapy, and medical therapy. One recent patient, for example, had an invasive tumor invading actually forward into the ethmoid sinuses, underwent surgery. All of his tumor was resected, the Cushing's resolved, he felt well, was lost to follow-up for a couple years, and returned with recurrent symptoms and recurrent tumor. Had repeat surgery and did well. Had another recurrence necessitating additional therapy, but at that time was found to have metastatic lesions to the brain and has received innumerable courses of gamma knife radiosurgery for multiple brain recurrences. Unfortunately, however, is now not doing well and is in hospice without plans for additional treatment. That individual's case serves as an excellent illustration that many of these tumors are unpredictable, and long-term and perhaps lifelong follow-up is warranted, especially for those with invasive tumors, but really for all patients with a history of an ACTH-producing pituitary adenoma. The longest time to recurrence that I have ever seen is 14 years. So I'm not sure that follow-up should ever be interrupted or discontinued. What's the harm in having a 24-hour urine cortisol and perhaps an ACTH determination annually? Lastly, just a word or two on cyclical Cushing's syndrome. This disorder has been reported in the literature, characterized as well-defined periodic or cyclical patterns to cortisol secretion that vary with an interval of days to months. We know that cortisol secretion is erratic in most patients with ACTH-producing pituitary adenomas, but these patients with cyclical Cushing's truly have periodicity in cortisol hypersecretion. As an example, perhaps the best case of this that I have ever encountered was a woman who had periods of profound hypercortisolism and marked Cushingoid features about 6 to 8 months apart. She would be sick for a couple of months and then would have dramatic and reasonable resolution of her symptoms in between these periods. She would be very Cushingoid, get a little bit better, become very Cushingoid again a few months later, get a little bit better again. And it took a while to prove that she truly had cyclical Cushing's based on urine cortisols. The interesting thing was that every time we tried to evaluate her with petrosal sinus sampling, she had adrenal insufficiency in between periods because her tumor was quiescent. So petrosal sinus sampling really led to no useful results whatsoever because ACTH levels everywhere were very low. However, when she was sick, her urine cortisol levels would measure over 500 micrograms in 24 hours, with normal being up to 50. When she was improved, cortisol levels were almost undetectable, and she had symptoms of adrenal insufficiency. Ultimately, because she was so sick, she underwent bilateral adrenalectomy and steroid replacement, principally because MRI of the pituitary was negative and there was nothing to operate on. 2 years later, she was found to have a 1 centimeter pituitary adenoma. At the time, she presented with hyperpigmentation and high ACTH levels. She underwent surgery and had confirmation of an ACTH-producing pituitary adenoma and enjoyed a total resection of that tumor with her operation. Her situation was unique in that it showed that you can have Cushing's with negative MRI, that cyclical Cushing's is a real phenomenon, and it also illustrated that sometimes adrenalectomy is the best treatment option to improve the quality of life of the patient, recognizing that an offending tumor, wherever it be, whether it be in the pituitary gland or the lungs or the thymus gland or what have you, can be dealt with at a later date. Her clinical history parallels those of some of the early reports of cyclical Cushing's and is in contrast to what we are seeing in this day and age, which is a lot of people, in my opinion, inappropriately diagnosed with cyclical Cushing's when what they have is erratic cortisol secretion. And confounding that is the diagnosis of cyclical Cushing syndrome in patients who have gained weight, maybe had some central weight redistribution, who have normal cortisol levels and no tumors on MRI, and only minimal elevations in midnight salivary cortisol. Are these patients with very early ACTH-producing pituitary adenomas? Do they have metabolic syndrome mimicking hypercortisolism? Is it pseudo-Cushing syndrome? Do they require treatment? Should medical therapy be utilized to determine if symptoms and signs improve before undertaking pituitary surgery? These are all questions that we do not have the answers to, but need to explore in the future. Doing so, we may unlock some of the mysteries of these remarkably interesting tumors that usually produce and sometimes secrete ACTH. Again, I'm Dr. Lewis Blevins of Pituitary World News. Thank you for listening. Please send us your comments and tell us your stories. Have a wonderful day.